You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, in today's edition of Bloodlines, which is a series that examines our diverse heritage as a nation, I'm speaking to Shantini Venugopal. Shantini is a singer, actor, director and teacher, and you've been in the Malaysian theatre industry for nearly 3 decades.
Wow, that long. A lot of people think that I'm Northern Indian. When I say I'm Indian, they think I'm Punjabi, but actually I'm a Malayali. I guess it's the nose that they think that I'm a Punjabi.
Where did you get that nose
idea.
From?
Actually, Malayalis also have very sharp noses, so I have no idea.
But do you feel Indian in any way?
Ooh, do I feel Indian? Oh. Yes, all the time. Actually, I feel like a person. Whether I don't really think of myself as Indian or Chinese or Malay or anything like that.
I know you work a lot with children, right?
Yes.
And do you find that they are conscious of this whole race issue?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. In fact, even when I was a kid, I never thought of my friends as what race they were. It was just interesting to go to their homes and have a different feel. It was all a different feeling in any one of their homes, whether they happen to be Chinese or Indians or Malays or, you know,
but
or
Eurasians. But do you think that in the last, I don't know, 20, 30 years, have you seen a change that people have become more polarized and more made aware of their differences, you know?
Definitely. Definitely. In fact, in schools, my sister used to be a teacher and she was saying it is just amazing how the children nowadays, they just tend to be among their own and they don't really mix around. And I think politics has got a lot to do with it. I mean, they're the ones who are dividing the people. It is not the people.
Because you work with children at different age groups, mm-hmm. At what age does this sort of behavior become evident?
I think it's when they start going to school. That's where it starts. And probably around the age of 9, 10, you know, because when they're really young, then it's absolutely not a problem. When they're 4, 5, 6,
they don't even know what race is.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And what about, I mean, I know you have a young son, mm-hmm. Who's 12, right?
Yes, he turns 13 in October. His name is Hariharan. I'm sure he'll want me to say that on the
hello. What do you think he feels about his identity? Does he talk to you about it?
No, he's never brought that subject up. And right now he goes to the Global Indian International School, so mainly Indians.
In Brickfield, right?
Yes, in Brickfield. He actually has no problems with race. I mean, he has a range of friends from all nationalities, all ages, actually.
What are some fond memories you had, you know, from your growing up years?
Oh, lots of fond memories. Because we grew up in Kamun Pandan area, Jalan Shah Bandar. And in that area, it was all government servants. And so we kids used to have a ball because either the parents knew each other or all of us kids, you know, everybody knew everybody. And in the evenings, like about 4 o'clock, 4:30, everybody was out and we were all playing. And in those days, we didn't have fences. It was just one big field and we used to play rounders and all kinds of things, gounda, goundi, police and thief, and all kinds of things. And that's what I think kids these days, because they don't play enough. And play, not, I don't mean this computer games, and, you know, that's totally different. When you're out there and playing with people and
you like interacting,
playing with other kids, yeah. Yes, that also you learn social skills.
But what then will be the consequence of these children now who are like ferried around in cars and living in gated communities and they don't have that, you know, freedom of movement really that you know, your generation had? What do you think will be the consequence for that, for society?
Well, you see, also the times have changed. Having children just going off on their own also, it's a bit scary these days. And you really worry. So the consequences, it's hard to tell.
I mean, they become so dependent
because,
on
yes,
you, right?
Yes, to get them places, which is why I moved closer to school. Because otherwise, it was going to be me having to take him to school, pick him up and, you know, take him to his friends' homes and stuff. So the place that I live in now, most of the kids go to the same school. So in the evenings, they go downstairs. They, in that small little parking lot, they play cricket. And they have a good time. You know, and that growing up That is such an important aspect, I feel.
But you know, when you were growing up, it seems that every family has that one person who's like the custodian of the storytelling. I mean, the stories about the family. Do you have someone in your family that always rants on about, you know, the past?
Not really, because my grandparents on my mum's side, they went off to India very, very long time back. I mean, even before my mother, or just when my mother got married, my grandfather had already passed away. So my grandmother took all the kids, except for my mum and my youngest uncle. Only the two of them were here. And on my father's side, in 1960, so I was very young, my grandfather had suffered paralysis. So he was bedridden, neck down, he was paralyzed. We didn't really have that much connection.
You didn't have those conversations, right?
Yes, and my grandmother, although they did stay with us at some point, you know, when you have somebody who's so ill, his mind was very alert, my grandfather, very, very alert. When you have someone ill, it's different. It's a different feel.
Mm. You feel that you've sort of managed to extract enough information about these stories to take forward?
No. I've extracted some, but not really that many.
Yeah. I mean, do you think people leave it too late with these things?
Yes, yeah. Definitely. And sometimes the person that you need to ask is no longer around, so it's very hard to get that information. So it's lost. Once it's gone, it's lost, yeah.
What about your parents?
My mother is an artist. She sings, she dances, and so she's very out there and a wonderful woman, way, way, way ahead of her years.
So she had a lot of suitors then?
Yes, actually she did, yeah. But then when she met my dad, she liked him, and so they decided to get married. And when they moved here, very soon after, my sister came along, so...
Done deal,
yes, exactly. And my mother continued her career in singing. She sang for various Indian dance troupes, Master Shivadas, Master Gopal Shetty.
So she sang in Hindi or Tamil?
She was very fluent in Tamil, Hindi, Malayalam. She even sang Malay.
Is that why you decided to follow in her footsteps?
Well, actually, it was always part of our growing up, so I never really thought about that. Of course, you think that you have to make money, so you go and study something. I did a business degree, but it has always been a passion. Myself, when I went off to Canada to do my business degree, and even while I was there, I had my own singing telegram. I had a singing telegram group. And even my first job was with NST, one of the Bharatiya subsidiaries. And even there, I joined the NST band. You know, there was Errol De Cruz, a whole lot of people. We all had this band, and I joined them. Then in 1985, I think, I decided, okay, now I want to see whether I can make it as a singer. Because I didn't want to have... 10 years down the line to say, what if I did that?
Yes. So how old were you in 85?
Mid-20s, yeah. And, so I did that. I quit my job. And fortunately, I've got parents who are very, very supportive. They said, as long as you are enjoying it and you're not causing harm to anybody else, go ahead and do it.
You were talking about how your mum sang in all these different languages, in Malay, mm-hmm. and Tamil, mm-hmm. Hindi. And what about your own singing career? I mean, would you say you focused in one area, in one language, or were you more...
Mainly in English, but because you do the hotel circuit, I can also sing in Chinese and in Malay.
Wow.
Yes.
That's great. Mm. So sing something in Chinese, yeah.
Chinese?
Yeah.
Okay. 秋夜 梦中 我曾找到爱 秋夜 梦中 我牵你
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
How'd you learn that?
Because when I was in Canada, we used to go for a lot of Chinese movies. And because in Chinatown, we used to do our shopping there. Watching all these Chinese movies, some of these old songs are so beautiful. And there's another one. 不知道为了什么，忧愁他为了着我，我灭点头爱知道，快看着爱的寂寞。 These are all
so romantic
songs, yeah. And I just fell in love with the song, so my Chinese friends used to romanize it for me, and that's how I learned it. So I learned it in Canada, and then when I started doing the club and the hotel circuit, it came in handy. Instead of singing things like Long Pan Chang 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 Long, you know,
yeah,
I was doing songs like this, and the audience really used to sit up because these are old songs and
classics, a lot
of people know it. Yes, they're classics, exactly. In fact, when I was doing a project in KKB with the children there in the different communities, we were having trouble getting through to the Chinese community because the kids were just not interested. I guess because of the language, because we were doing a play in English. Then after we did the play, I mean, they laughed and stuff like that. We did Little Red Riding Hood. But after that, we were just sitting around, and I just suddenly thought of, hey, why don't I do a song? And I did. And it was amazing how suddenly we connected. And then the kids were more willing to listen to what we had to do with them. And then we started our theater training and everything, and I never had to do another Chinese song, but we had already made that connection.
You broke the ice.
Yeah, so sometimes, you know, through music, if you know that person's language, even if you don't speak it, if you can sing it, you know, you still make that connection. And that's what it's all about. Human beings want that connection.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's great. I mean, you also mentioned, I mean, talking about English as a language in Malaysia, it's sort of seen its ups and downs. You know, a lot of people feel uneasy about English because it's seen as a colonial hangover from the colonial
days. That's
because
the education system here is... can I say the word screwed?
Sure. People say that, you know, these days people don't speak English as well as, you know, probably your parents did.
Yes.
You know, what's going on? I mean,
no,
you are
emphasis.
Anti-English, right? So what's going on here?
Well, anti-English has no clue, but it's really, it boils down to the education system. You know, to me, it really seems like one day somebody wakes up and says, okay, let's do this in English. And then they go out and do it, and they say, oh, it doesn't work. Okay, let's go back to Malay. And I think the biggest problem in Malaysia is a lot of things are implemented, but there is no follow-up, there is no training, there is nothing to support whatever policies.
So then it isn't really implemented, right? I mean,
exactly.
It's really executed.
It is not, yeah, it is. Mm. That's right. It is not fully executed. The right way.
Education is hugely important. I mean, what are the consequences for, let's say, the next generation? Do you feel like that your son would or should continue living in Malaysia if the education system is so bad? What are your fears or hopes, really?
Well, I hope things will change because it's just not my son. It's all those other children out there. It's not everybody who can afford to have your child go away or... you know, to go and study somewhere else, because everything costs money, and a lot of money. And it just really comes down to politics.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so sorry to say that, but that seems to be a hindrance for a lot of things, because everybody's out there wanting to make a buck, wanting to be in power, wanting to put other people down. And if you continuously have that, then...
But don't you think people will get fed up with all this?
I hope so, because I am fed up. So I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who are just as fed up as I am.
Just as a final question, in the last 10 years, say, I mean, what has been the moments where you felt the most proud to be Malaysian?
I always feel Malaysian. So to ask me a question like that, I guess, yeah, the elections of 2008, when people actually did a turnabout and said, hey, listen, you guys, enough of all this. You know, let's have some change. So, yes, 2008, I was very proud to say that I'm a Malaysian, because really you could see that people wanted the change and we made it happen. Now, slowly, it's kind of going downhill, but hopefully that will be revived again.
We had a taste for it.
Yes, and so I hope That doesn't die. That spirit of, yes, we can make a difference.
BFM 89.9, the business station.